It's Open Air on the Rhythm and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio. Today, it's a twofer. We've actually got two great singer-songwriters in our studios at the same time. Ellis Paul is here and Rebecca Lobe is here. Hello, you guys. Welcome.
Thanks for having us.
It's a real pleasure, especially to have both of you together. You are out on tour. How many dates together on this run?
We're just touring through the weekend. We got four nights of shows, but we've been doing this consistently all over the country, so it's kind of ongoing.
Rebecca, you've got a new album that was just out in the last few months. Ellis, you have a new-ish album.
New-ish, yes.
Right, at least the non-children's album. Yes. We'll talk about some of your children's music in a little while. Ellis, I want to start by asking you to reflect on this term that's cropped up over the last couple of years. You are now starting to be referred to as the dean of the Boston indie singer-songwriter scene. How does that sit with you?
I'd rather be the Duke, I think. I need something more cool than Dean.
Dean Paul.
Dean Paul.
I never would call myself that, but it's nice that people are referring to me as sort of a mentor to other people and a representative of Boston in a way, although I don't live there anymore. I live in Virginia, but I lived there for 20 years.
And longevity of doing it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, which Rebecca and I have been talking about that. It's hard to keep this thing, going years and years and years and years and years. You have to be really committed. And so I'm still at it after 25 years or so.
When you were coming up in mid-90s, I guess, and there were amazing singer-songwriters in the Boston scene then, what were the main characteristics that defined that Boston folky sound?
The main thing was that we were all functioning and growing within this listening room environment rather than bars. Like most singer-songwriters come out of bar scenes, and we were going to places and playing open mics where even there you could hear a pin drop. So the music tended to be a little bit more literary and a little more lyric-driven, and what you said wasn't more important than how you said it. And I think that's what kind of the foundation of folk music is. So, we were lucky. It was a great place to learn how to do this art form.
After all the years, and especially now that you don't live there, do you still feel intimately connected to that scene, or has it changed a bit?
The scene there has changed. It's less singer-songwritery and more old-time music and Celtic and roots music based now. That was just kind of a phase, but now, like in Austin, there are the city of Austin down in Texas, there's lots of singer-songwriters coming out of there. And so it seems like it just shifts around the country depending on where that collection of people are that are really excited about doing this kind of thing.
It's true now you've won 14 Boston Music Awards. Mm-hmm. So even having moved out of town, you are still much loved in that scene.
Yeah, I'm still part of it. So I feel like I'm still a Boston guy, even though I'm living in the South now.
Yeah. Your newest album of traditional Ellis Paul singer-songwriter tunes is called The Day After Everything Changed. Can we hear a song from that?
Sure.
What are you going to play for us first?
This one is called Rose Tattoo, and Rebecca's going to sing with me.
I got laid on its Monday. I'm calling to tell you it don't sit with me well. I feel like I failed you. You say we got each other, that's plenty enough, and I know that's true. But we got one kid coming, one still in diapers. It's a rainy drive home with one good wiper. Leave the porch light on. I need a beacon just to pull me to you. If I ever lost you, I would be lost too. Just drifting in a sea of blue. You're in my skin like a rose tattoo, like a the economy's crashing. This poor boy's laughing, 'cause there's nothing to lose. We don't live in no mansion. There's no bling to put on. Only Walmart fashion will do. Inside the house, the baby screaming, pasta steaming. I look through the windows, feels like I'm dreaming. You pull the door open, say daddy when you're coming home. If I ever lost you, I would be lost too. Just drifting in a sea of blue. You're in my skin like a rose. That's you, like a rose. That's you. You say we'll fight for the best case scenario. And then you put Van Morrison on stereo. Well, sure there's trouble in the boardrooms, trouble in the factories, trouble in the alleys out back. We've got love in these patterns, love is what matters. And baby, I got your back. Cut your back. Cut your path. Hey, I got your path.
It's Ellis Paul with help from Rebecca Lobey live in the JPR studios here on the Rhythm and News Service. A tune from the day after everything changed. Ellis Paul live on Jefferson Public Radio. Ellis, Nora Guthrie once said about you, pretty amazing quote. She said, Ellis is one of our best human compasses, marking in melodies and poems where we've been and where we might go if we so choose to. How did that relationship with Nora Guthrie start for you?
I met Nora Guthrie over a tattoo, actually, and it was on my right shoulder of her father.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, she had heard about it, and we'd seen each other in passing before that, but that was the first time we ever hung out. She wanted to see the tattoo, and she took me into a bar at a convention. We were at a music convention, folk music convention, if you can believe those things that exist. And with that moment, she also met a guy who was also looking at the tattoo, a guy named Michael, who she ended up falling in love with and marrying in 6 months after that moment. So there's some personal connections there that run pretty deep.
She's been very welcoming of handpicking singer-songwriters to work on scraps left behind by her father. And yeah. You were one of them that was invited to, what, finish a song fragment?
Well, actually, the song was completed, but he never recorded it, and Woody never took the time to, you know, write down what the melodies were that he was singing or the chord changes. So there's about 1,000 songs in the catalog. Wow. That are just strays.
Do you have plans to record any others?
I wouldn't mind. You know, I didn't want to get greedy. She wanted to give me 2 or 3 at the time, but I felt like that one. I just wanted to get one done and just to see how it went over with her. And I'd like to approach her again about maybe doing a couple more because the writing is so great. I mean, he was obviously a brilliant, brilliant guy.
Tell me a little bit about the transition that you have made over the years from folk musician, quote unquote, mm-hmm. to not quite folk anymore.
Right.
What is it now? Do you have a good definition of the kind of music that you're making and many others are making now, which sort of falls in this in-between of folk-based, but there's drums and sometimes there's electric instruments and it's got more to it?
Right. I think, you know, just like Woody and everybody that was doing folk music in the 40s and 50s even, that music was a combination of gospel music and mountain music and country music and the blues. And it was all a hybrid, you know. But now, of course, we've gone through, you know, rock and roll and disco and, you know, the singer-songwriter thing, the folk rock thing, the punk rock thing. And so all of those music forms are, you know, melting into what I do. And so it's not just, I think probably because I travel around and I play the folk circuit, because a lot of the songs have content that is worthy of that term. You know, they're about people going through struggles and how you're going to fix those struggles. And it works with an acoustic guitar. And I consider myself to be a folk musician, though I don't often record in that mode, you know. Mm. So, but there's pop elements in it, there's rock elements in it, there's country music elements, blues elements, jazz elements. It's a little bit of everything.
It's Ellis Paul and Rebecca Lobey live in the JPR studios. On Rose Tattoo, you had help from the incredibly sweet voice of Rebecca Lobey, who we're lucky to have here in our studios as well. Rebecca, you have also kind of had this similar trajectory of making folk-based music with this one glaring side detour.
Why, what could you be talking about?
You ended up as a contestant on The Voice, one of television's big music competition programs.
Guilty as charged.
How did that come about? I mean, like, how does something that big and mainstream end up on the radar of somebody that's making acoustic guitar-based singer-songwriter music?
Well, you know, I've been supporting myself, touring nationally and playing wherever I can for the past 5 years or so. And so I've got a lot of CDs out there just kind of floating in random people's hands that I've been selling out of the trunk of my car and at the merch tables of my gigs for a very long time. And out of the blue, a few months before season one started, I got an email from my website from one of the casting directors of the show asking if I would be interested in auditioning. And, you know, it didn't sound like the kind of thing that I was interested in. They don't typically, and it didn't sound like the kind of thing that they would pick someone like me for. They don't really put touring indie folk singers on national network singing competition right. shows. So I figured I didn't really have much of a chance of getting cast, but I wasn't going to be the one to tell them that. I wasn't going to reject myself for them. So I went to the audition just to meet some people in the entertainment industry and be friendly and kind of have a bizarre learning experience. And I think I was so confident that I wouldn't get chosen that I was very relaxed in my audition and made a good impression, and they kept inviting me to come back. And it was only after I had gotten most of the way through the process and I was getting to know that casting director who had initially emailed me, and I asked her how it was that I even came across her radar. And are you ready for this? Because I'm going to tell you the complete truth. She dated a guy that I went to middle school with in Atlanta. And at Christmas...
Treat your old boyfriends yeah. well. That's the
at
message.
At Christmas time, while she was dating that guy, his little sister, who had always been a friend of mine, gave her one of my CDs. And this was years, like 2 or 3 years ago. And she had the CD sitting on her desk. She liked it. And when she got, I mean, she'd been casting all sorts of weird TV shows. But when it came time to do a singing show, she said I was one of the first people she thought of. Because she thought, like, I know of that singer. He told me about that girl. And she emailed me right away.
So even still, it's all about who you know. Or who you knew.
Right.
I guess this is the case. Ellis Paul and Rebecca Lobey are my guests live in the JPR studios. Ellis Paul's latest album is called The Day After Everything Changed. Rebecca's newest album is called Circus Heart. Mm-hmm. Is it true that you worked on those songs during the recording of The Voice?
Yeah, actually, I had a lot of downtime while I was on the show. I was in Los Angeles, sequestered in a hotel, not allowed to tell anybody that
about
I was
the
there.
Outcome, right? Yeah.
No, just even that I was in town.
Oh, really?
I wasn't allowed to leave the building for 6 weeks.
Why?
Well, because we had 8 very important minutes of television to film. you know, honestly, I think it has to do with protecting their investment. I think that they wanted the identities of the contestants to remain secret. And I think that they also wanted us to, like, not get, you know, hurt in the wide world because they had been spending money on putting us on their show. Not to be crass, but for whatever reason, we were sequestered in this hotel. And I had all this downtime and a lot of nervous energy because that kind of experience is very nerve-wracking. And yeah, I spent a lot of time fiddling on guitar and just playing songs and writing scraps, and a lot of them turned into the songs that are on my record, Circus Heart.
Can we hear one of them?
Absolutely. This song actually ties in very directly with The Voice. I started writing it the day I auditioned in Austin when I met all the folks who work in the entertainment industry casting the show, and they thought it was very bizarre to learn that I make a living playing songs I write at gigs that I book and drive myself to. And I thought it was very bizarre that they had no idea that there are thousands of people who make a living this way, many of whom play on your show. So I went home and started writing this song for them. It's about who I am and what I do. I have traveled many fathoms, lived inside a covered wagon, sold my secrets wholesale every night. I've broken bread with petty tyrants, smuggled wine to fallen giants, battled demons right before your eyes. And now I try ocean side to govern the rolling tide. Swallowed by the sea, begging from the shore, counted cards and covered bases, made belief till I was making do. Now where do I draw the line between vittles and valentines? Swallowed by the sea, begging from the shore, tempted by the sweet.
That is Rebecca Lobey live in the JPR studios. Ellis, 18 albums, something like that now?
I think 16 things.
16 different things?
Yeah.
You have
some of those are DVDs and earlier records that they've lumped in. This is like the management number.
But that's a lot of songs. I mean, you have been relatively prolific over the years. Do you still find the songwriting coming as steadily, and I don't know if easily is a good word to apply, but as steadily as it did when you were starting out?
I think even more so.
Really?
Yeah. I think I'm juggling more things as a songwriter now. I'm writing for kids. I have a pop rock project with a friend of mine. I have my singer-songwriter stuff. I'm writing for film and television and country people. So, you know, there's a lot more. I have a lot more, you know, fingers in the pie than I used to.
And so. Probably more life experiences to draw stories from.
Yeah. Right? And I'm still looking for them. I mean, I'm constantly on the prowl for good things to write about.
I've read it, some interviews that you have given over the years where you have described songs that have almost written themselves in an hour. Does that still happen?
Yeah, some do. Yeah. Really? You hope for those. Huh. A great song makes you feel like you're slipping into a snow globe of sorts, you know, like you're a witness on the outside and then the first line comes in and it pulls you in and then suddenly you're in the snow globe. You don't even know it. And you're picturing all these things that are happening in the snow globe. But instead of using Bob Dylan's mind in references, you're putting your old girlfriend in the seat that he put his old girlfriend in, and you're putting your car instead of his car, and suddenly it's your life, even though it was written about someone else's. And that's the kind of thing that I'm trying to get to all the time. And it's about firing the senses in a visual way, writing to show rather than to tell, and writing with specific details, not so grandly metaphoric, but writing with the dust on a table and describing it in a way that shows that the person is depressed that's sitting there, or, you know, those little things that really trigger your mind to what's being said.
You mentioned your side project of pop rock. Another side project, I gather, is the songs that you've written for kids.
Yeah.
Tell me about that project. How did that get started?
Well, I have kids and I'm gone all the time. I leave almost every weekend and I wanted my voice in the house and I wanted them to be part of the creative process. So, I started writing for them. And, the most recent one is called The Hero in You, and it's sort of like schoolhouse rock songs. They're little biographies of famous Americans, and it's been doing well. Won a Parents' Choice Gold Award, and so it's getting out there among... I don't do many kids shows. I maybe do 20 or 30 kids shows a year, but I like writing for kids. I think in a lot of ways I'm fulfilling my mission statement as a folk singer more with that music than I am with my singer-songwriter stuff.
And early on, before you became a musician full-time, you worked with kids for a while, right?
I did, yeah.
So it's kind of come back around. There's some interesting songs. You mentioned the title, The Hero in You, but the songs are written about individual people.
Mm-hmm.
Describe those. Or some of them. Pick a couple of them.
Well, like Rosa Parks. There's a song about Rosa Parks, and that all happened in the 50s, so I made a sort of a gospel-y doo-wop version of the song. So it was sort of centered around that time period. There's a song about, you know, there's a poem about Thomas Edison that is basically the train of thought, because I believe in my head that he had ADD. He was sort of constantly writing ideas. He had 1,000 patents, and I have to like do a lot of research on these people and then boil down the essence of who they are in 3 minutes and try and find that through line where I can write a song. So it's fascinating and historical and fun to write those things. It's been a ball.
Do you have plans to make more of that kind of music?
I think so. I'll do it until my daughters turn 13.
And then, <Don't care. laughs>
and then once they don't care, I don't know that I will either. But I want music in their childhoods until they're done with me in that part of my life.
I was reading about this marathon 4-day concert series that you did where you played music from all of your albums in chronological order.
I did. You've really done your research.
Why did you do that? What was the motivation?
It was a retrospective.
Well, I mean, it seems exhausting.
It was a marathon, and we did it over four nights, four shows at Club Passim, and did two albums per night, and it was amazing. They all sold out and people came to all four shows. And
that must have been a heck of a lot of work for you, because I'm imagining after 16 albums, you probably only have two, maybe three songs per album still under your fingers regularly.
That's
part of your set list, right?
Yeah.
You had to go back and woodshed a lot, I'm guessing.
I did. And then I had to set up a cheat sheet where I could be memory triggered by all these, you know, tunings and, you know, chord progressions and how they fall. Cause I play in so many open tunings that I don't even know the names of the chords I'm playing at times. So I have to, you know, write down the shapes of the chord rather than the name of the chord and things like that. It took a lot of work, but it was great. It was really fun.
When you went back into that catalog, did you rediscover some things that you had forgotten that you actually liked quite a bit?
I did, but honestly, more often found stuff that I was wondering why Why did you do this? I can't remember the reason, but you did it, and there it is. But there's probably one or two songs per record that were surprises, and probably three or four that were surprises in a negative sense.
Ellis Paul and Rebecca Lobi are my guests live in the JPR studios. Do we have time to go out with one more tune? What do you want to play for us?
I'll do something new. The song's called Chasing Beauty, and it's going to be on the new record.
Let's shoot out the satellites. We're throwing whiskey at the twilight. Oh, you were raging, blazing, occasionally raising a bottle to the night. You said every dream that could cross our lips lies just beyond our fingertips. I caught some, and saw my lips slip right through my fingers. Time we both lost track. Time was an open road. You can't look back. You're chasing beauty.
It's Ellis Paul and Rebecca Lobi live in the JPR studios here on the Rhythm and News Service. Guys, thanks so much for coming in today. This has been
Thank
a real
you,
pleasure
Eric.
To have you both.
Thank you so much for having us.